If you're just joining us, we're on a lighthouse tour in Door County. It is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This weekend is a rare opportunity to see some of the historic lighthouses up close. Door County is home to 11, and the Fall Lighthouse Festival is a way to explore them by land and boat. What are your favorite lighthouses to visit in Wisconsin? What do you love about them? Have you visited a lot of lighthouses across the state? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kevin Osgood is Executive Director of the Door County Maritime Museum. Kevin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Well, lighthouses are such a rich part of Door County's history, and many of them were built soon after the Civil War. Can you take us way back in time and tell us how all of these lighthouses really came to be for the sailors?
Sure. We have to think back to what transportation was like in the early 1800s. We're so used to seeing the large freight trains, semi-trucks on the highway. Those things didn't really exist, not up in Door County, not in certain parts of the Midwest, and especially in northern Wisconsin. So the horizon on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior would just be filled with a forest of masts of schooners, just delivering goods, day-to-day goods to every port and every village. Every settlement, the ships were coming and going constantly. As the population started to increase and the demand for the goods increased, a lot more ships are on the water, and there's a lot of treacherous waters, especially here on the Door County coastline, and the companies that own the ships were losing ships. The consequence of that, kind of a side attraction now in Door County, is we're home to more than 250 shipwrecks in the shallow waters off Door County, and most of those are schooners from the 1800s. So in the early 1800s, 1820s, 1830s, a lot of the shipping companies were petitioning Congress to do something about it, and they had the power. And the first lighthouse was put on Rock Island, Pottawatomie Light, and that opened up in 1837, and it's still there. It's been restored. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a little bit of a trek to get there. Even once you're there, after two ferry rides, you still have to walk a mile and a quarter to get to the lighthouse, but you're literally stepping back in time. Nothing there has changed over time, and it looks exactly the same as it did. And the coast just has just numerous lighthouses that all have stories, because even once they were built, there were still shipwrecks, because sometimes we all know what the weather can do in northeast Wisconsin.
And we can sail along in a 19th century tall ship. What about the schooner cruise on the Edith M. Becker? What is that opportunity like?
You can. There's two departures for the Edith Becker. It's a tall ship, and they're both on Saturday. And they kind of go out and kind of take you back in time on the water. And you hear the same sounds aboard that ship that you would have heard 150 years ago. And you'll go out along the shoreline and by Peninsula State Park and get a really good look at Eagle Bluff Lighthouse. So the surrounding waters there, the lighthouse, the top of the bluff with the rocky shores, and it will really kind of set the tone and the feel for what it must have been like for those mariners.
Are any of the lighthouses in Door County in use today? What is their status?
They are all, except for one, is really still used as a marker of sorts for mariners. The only one that's not is the old Birdcage Light in Bailey's Harbor. That's now privately owned, but you can still see it from a couple of the tours. We have a couple of kayak expeditions that'll take you by there, so you can see that light and see how things changed so rapidly. That light was built as an entrance light for Bailey's Harbor to guide ships in, but almost immediately after it went into service, again, the shipping captains were complaining that it's just not good enough. It's hard to see. It's not in the right place. So within 10 years, they had built Cana Island Lighthouse just a mile or so away from there so the ship captains could get a better, earlier look to be on the right course to get into the harbor.
Tell us about the kayaking we can do to see these lighthouses. What is that tour like?
Well, there's four of them. Two each day. One of them starts from Reinbold Creek in Bailey's Harbor, and it'll take you out to the Cana Island Lighthouse, and you'll see that from the water and be able to climb the lighthouse and have a box lunch on the grounds while you're there. So you get to do both. You get to paddle out to the lighthouse, see it from the water, which is a very unique experience, one I'm very jealous of. Some of my staff got to do that last week, and I didn't have yet to do, but the pictures they took are just fantastic. So the experience of paddling out and seeing it come into view, and then you can paddle up, pull your boats ashore, and enjoy your box lunch, take a tour of the grounds, and climb to the top of the lighthouse tower. So that's one of them, and those leave at 9 o'clock, both on Saturday and Sunday morning. And then there's another one, the Bailey's Harbor Lighthouse kayaking experience, and you're going to go also past the range lights in Bailey's Harbor, which are also 150-year-old pair of lighthouses that were built also in 1869, same year that Cana was built, to help guide ships into the protection of Bailey's Harbor, because that was a harbor of protection in storms that mariners could quickly get in. But in order to get in there safely, you needed to line the ship up on an exact compass course. And range lights are one shorter lighthouse and one taller lighthouse lined up just so when you're on the right course, you can see the lights right above and below each other. So you can paddle out to see those on that tour, as well as the birdcage light. So that's just another opportunity to see some very interesting places. Those leave in the afternoon on both Saturday and Sunday.
We're on a Door County Lighthouse Tour with Kevin Osgood. He's Executive Director of the Door County Maritime Museum. You can join in. Have you visited lighthouses? Which ones have the best views? What ones do you appreciate in Door County? What about the lighthouse at Eagle Bluff or the range lights on Plum Island? What about lighthouses that fascinate you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Kevin, we can also explore the Plum and Pilot Island lighthouses on a rafting tour of Death's Door. Take us to Death's Door.
No one's ever asked me to take them to Death's Door before. But I should point out that they are called an adventure rafting tour, but these are very large boats. It's not an adventure raft. You don't have to paddle through Death's Door. They'll take very good care of you on the Death's Door trip, and it will take you out.
I've never heard someone say they'll take very good care of you, throwing it right back at you. Carry on.
We've taken a lot of phone calls from people saying, I'm not quite sure about this adventure rafting. It's not rafting. You're not being shot down a fast-moving river. It's just an opportunity to move in. It's an open boat, but it's a very large boat, and they'll take you out through Death's Door to see the lighthouses, Plum and Pilot Island. The Plum Island tour, you can actually a guided tour of the island from the Friends of Plum and Pilot Islands. You'll cover more than 2 miles walking around on the island, so bring good walking shoes. And it says not to wear shorts, but I don't think we're going to have a problem with that this weekend. No one's probably going to want to wear shorts. But it's an opportunity to get someplace and see things up close, peer in the windows. And there's a lot of hard work being done by the Friends of Plum and Pilot Island there to bring those buildings back and make that a really special place that's preserved for generations to come. So it's a very unique opportunity to go take advantage of.
Right. Plum and Pilot Island, this is quite rare to be able to go on the island and walk around.
It is. And they just have the most interesting history when you start to dig into it. We were very lucky recently that someone who had been out there several years ago in their own private boat found some lighthouse keepers' logs that were just through people that went out there and did things they weren't supposed to do, trespassed or whatever, but they stacked a bunch of these things outside in the rain. So most of them, more than half of them, were unreadable. But the others we've got and we're preserving, and just going through and reading the keeper's log there, the things they had to deal with, is just tells a story and kind of takes you back in time. So it's a very, very unique place that had a lot of challenges with the weather, just like all of the lighthouse stations up and down the coast. Cana Island has a history of they had a keeper that was just so frustrated with being there. An assistant keeper one day told the keeper that he was going to Sturgeon Bay, and when he got to Sturgeon Bay, he messaged back that he had resigned from the lighthouse service and he wasn't coming back to Cana Island. So, and that was just one day. And when you go through the Cana Island log, there's just interesting log entry after log entry of the worst storm ever on the Great Lakes. Water is running around the house, and then you turn the page and it's 2 weeks later, and it's the worst storm ever on the Great Lakes. Water is again running through the house. And the next year, it's the same thing. And we lost the boat today. And then 6 months later, the Lighthouse Service would bring them a small boat back. Just interesting, interesting stories that happened at these lighthouses.
And these logs are such a window into that history. You know, you can really find a day-to-day almost diary of what was happening in this area.
Right. And one of the most amazing stories is to go back to Pilot Island, and we'll go back to 1892 in October. And we all know what the weather is like in October and November here on the water and the stories that come from it. The Pilot Island lighthouse keeper at that time was Martin Knudsen. And within the span of basically 2 weeks, two different schooners wrecked off the shores of Pilot Island. And Marty Knudsen didn't hesitate, and he took a rowboat out into the storms and rescued the crews of both schooners. And for that, and he brought them ashore. He was keeper of Pilot Island between 1880 and 1897. But when this happened, he received a life-saving medal from the Life-Saving Benevolent Association of New York. And this is a gold life-saving medal. And on the back of it, it says, presented to Martin Knudsen, lighthouse keeper, Pilot Island, Lake Michigan, in recognition of his courage and humanity in rescuing, at great personal peril, the crews of the wrecked schooner Gilmore and Nichols, October 1892. So within 1 month, he rowed out twice into storms of the Great Lakes, rescued schooner crews, and he has this gold life-saving medal, which when we researched this medal, found out that that's basically the civilian equivalent in 1897 of the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Wow. We're learning about the lighthouses in Door County with Kevin Osgood as our guide. He's head of the Door County Maritime Museum. You can join in on lighthouses at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this Wisconsin Weekend in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're exploring the 11 historic lighthouses in Door County, hearing the stories, finding out about these buildings, how to get there. And the Door County Maritime Museum celebrates these lighthouses, offers tours during the Fall Lighthouse Festival that is this weekend. Do you have a favorite lighthouse in Door County? What about Bailey's Harbor Range Lights or Pottawatomie Light on Rock Island? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kevin Osgood stays with us. He's the head of the Maritime Museum in Door County. Kevin, you know, Lake Michigan saw record levels this year. In July, it was the highest it's been in 33 years. What kind of impact has that had on tourism and seeing these lighthouses?
I don't think it's slowed tourism in the least. It's been a challenge, though, specifically at Kena Island, because Kena Island, with this high water, is an island once again. A lot of people have come to the island, and when they get to the end of the road, so to speak, and typically there was a causeway that in years past has been dry, and you could walk across this causeway to Kena Island. Well, 3 years ago, there was about 6 inches of water over the causeway. 4 years ago, 6 inches of water. So the museum purchased a John Deere tractor and an old hay wagon. And for those who didn't want to get their feet wet, we could take them across this little bit of water on the causeway. Now there's almost 3 feet of water on that causeway. We had to get a bigger tractor. We had to raise our hay wagon almost a foot just to be able to get people across. Now the water at 3 feet isn't really not that terribly deep. But again, that weather of Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes, so when the waves kick up and the wind kicks up, it's just too much and we can't take folks across. So we haven't been able to bring as many people to the island this summer. And it's been a bit of a challenge, but when the weather does cooperate, the people come out. And it's fun. I went back through just yesterday ahead of speaking with you to look through the keeper's log at Kena Island. And there's several references to the water levels. Back in 1924, they tried to put some gravel down to make that causeway a road. And it says September 29th, finished hauling 100 loads of gravel to the station to help create the causeway. But then there's a note several months later that says the causeway is gone. The lake took it back. So it's just Mother Nature. And here on the Great Lakes, it's just what happens. And that, while high water has been challenging, it is something to see, because if the wind is coming from the right direction at Kena, the waves go around the island and then cross and make an X pattern as they break and come ashore. So it's a very unique opportunity to see a phenomenon in nature that doesn't happen everywhere. And that's really how the causeway has sort of stayed a causeway over the last 150 years, is because those waves that cross on the backside of the island deposit rocks and sand and everything else there along that stretch. Now, it will move every day that our crew goes to the island. They put on a pair of waders and first take a look, because the little sandy beach where the tractor pulls up moves. And over the last 2 weeks, it's moved twice with the different storms that we've had. First, it was on the far left side of the landing, and most recently on the far right. And after the last storm, it's kind of mixed back to the center. And they'll walk across to open the island and make sure that there hasn't been some trench or a boulder deposited right in the middle of where we drive the tractor and we have to change course. So it's an ongoing thing, but again, it's exactly what everyone's been having to deal with there for 150 years, especially the keepers and assistant keepers and their families that live there, or the Genda family who lived there in the 1970s and 80s with their entire family out on the island. And this past year, we celebrated the 150th anniversary of Kena, and we had more than 20 descendants of keepers come out to that birthday party on the island.
Oh, and how special.
It was great. And talking to the Genda family and their children who grew up on the island, there's no indoor plumbing. So they had the same privy that the lighthouse keepers had in the 1860s and 70s was their privy in the 1970s and 1980s. And they would often be using that when guests would be walking across the island. They would take their baths in Lake Michigan. They just have some amazing stories to tell.
Oh, Kevin, thank you so much for sharing this history, and good luck with the lighthouse tour this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Kevin Osgood is Executive Director of the Door County Maritime Museum, and we have a link to the festival on our website. Visit WPR.org/mornings. And for disclosure, the Door County Maritime Museum is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Just ahead of homecoming, here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about University of Wisconsin's marching band.
The bass drums, the tubas, the shenanigans. The UW Marching Band is iconic. And this year, they're going through some big changes. For the first time in 50 years, they have a new band director, Dr. Corey Pompey. WPR's Tim Peterson caught up with a pair of the band's veterans at a rehearsal to hear about these changes. He spoke with drum major Justine Spohr and assistant drum major and trombone player Grant Pettick.
And one, two, ready.
We'll typically start our rehearsals with some warm-ups and stretches, so we'll do some breathing exercises.
Air! Take in up air!
Just get a few notes out on the instruments. Then we'll move into some stretching, because what we do is very physically athletic and intensive, so we want to make sure we're well warmed up for that.
Who? Who's my partner?
Our marching step is so different than anything you might have learned in high school.
I think that it's very difficult to do our step and play at the same time. It's very athletic. The step is very jarring.
I think it's much more exciting, energetic, engaging. Insert positive adjective that starts with E here.
And I think we've been working this year to kind of try and smooth out some of the playing while still maintaining the energy and the athleticism in the step. So I think this year and moving forward, hopefully our sound will be a little more powerful. Then we'll usually do a brief music rehearsal. And then we'll move into our pregame practice. So that's the show that we do before the game starts. So we'll run all of the Wisconsin classics, like On Wisconsin, Songs to the Wisconsin, If You Want to Be a Badger, things like that. And then we'll move on to our music for the halftime. and then we'll start with a run through, and then we'll kind of work it set by set, moving from formation to formation, do a little bit of touch up and cleaning. And then end the rehearsal with another full run through of halftime or some conditioning drills. Mike's music that he selected in previous years was maybe a little less recognizable to some of the people in the student section. And I think some of the new music that we're getting is moving into the 21st century. The thing that makes me most excited about being a part of this ensemble is just the energy and enthusiasm and passion that every other person has here. You wouldn't be able to do this step and be a part of this band if it wasn't something that you really wanted to do.
You know, at the end of the day, no matter the score, we go out there on Saturday and we do the best that we can do. So as long as we feel like we've put out a good show and done what we know how to do really well, that's all we can do. Obviously, it's nice if the score comes out in our favor, but it doesn't take much for me to get everybody excited on game day. It's just the way we are.
Even if it's like 6 a.m. bus runs?
Even the 6 a.m. bus runs to 2:30 a.m. bus runs back. I mean, we got the energy. It feels very special. There's not a day in rehearsal or game days or even days when I'm not at rehearsal that I don't feel extremely lucky to be doing this. Extremely blessed to have this opportunity and to have met the awesome people that I have, to be playing the music that I really have come to love and appreciate. And there's really nothing like being able to go out and celebrate our football team, as well as our basketball team, hockey team, volleyball team, all of that stuff. It's just really special to be able to do what we do.
Tim Peterson brought us a story about the UW Marching Band. He's a producer for WPR Central Time and played in Marching Band at Northwestern. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.